Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We'll get things going. We'll move through this agenda. So item one, I don't believe there's been any changes since we were emailed the agenda. So I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
The agenda.
Oh, yes. I'll second that.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Hearing none opposed, the motion passes. First item on our action items, approval of the February 15th, 2024, Core MPO CAC meeting minutes. If you all have reviewed them, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Do we have a printed copy of the minutes?
Do you want me to open them on the computer? Yeah. Let me know when you need me to scroll. Or if you just want to, like, just quick. Oh, this way. Oh, up. Move to the next action item or to the next item. right. Do you still need the? Okay. No problem. Hey, Armand, are you ready to request a vote on the approval of the minutes?
There's still a motion on the floor. Mr. Abbott, are you satisfied with the minutes?
Yes. Second motion.
Thank you. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Hearing none opposed, the motion passes. Moving on to action item number 2, adoption of the updated MOU.
Good afternoon. We have talked about MOU repeatedly at those meetings. So I just want to let you know we did double checking for all of this. So I'll just go over them once again. So for the contracting parties or the signatory parties, we added in Bryan County, Guyton, Rincon, and Springfield. And then so we have Chatham County, Bryan County, and Effingham County with their municipalities. And we also have a modal representative for CAT, Georgia Ports Authority, and Savannah Airport Commission. And we also updated the boundary. Remember, we actually talked about the boundary at the last meeting, and the Cornfield Board adopted the new boundary on February the 28th. So we update the language regarding the boundary. So just include the southern Richmond, southern Bryan County as agreed upon by Bryan County. So scenario one. We updated the title of the MPC exec director. Melanie wants to be added in as the exec director and CEO. And then this is the part that is related to us, the CEC and the ACAT. We decided to consolidate the CEC and the ACAT to the Transportation Equity and the Public Involvement Advisory Committee. So currently, CEC is basically overseeing the staff on the participation plan update, but with the consolidated committee, you will also be overseeing the Title VI plan, environmental justice report, and language assistance plan. So everything related to equity will be under your purview. So this is the part that has been consolidated. So, and then we added in the bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee. This is a newly established committee, and they will be overseeing the development update of the non-motorized transportation plan and the implementation of the plan. I'll also keep track of the status. And then we also updated the part that the MPC, basically the Quorum PO staff is doing, because previously we outlined our duties, but we didn't include the Title VI plan part of it. So this is a required document. So we added in the roles and responsibilities of MPC, or the Transportation Department MPC that does this. So we added this part in. And then for the signature page, we just added in the parties that we added, the Bryan County, Rincon, Springfield, and Guyton. So they are added in as highlighted over here. You can see the red text would be the newly added. This is the Guyton. And then Exhibit A, we did update because we update the boundaries. Exhibit A is the boundary. So this is the new boundary. Exhibit A is the new boundary. So in Bryan County, instead of covering all of Bryan County except the Fort Stewart, now we only cover Richmond Hill and then part of Bryan County that is as indicated in this map. And then also Exhibit B, since we did the polling, we are going to have an election on the Quorum PO board. So that means Chatham County will not pay for the other municipalities, because currently they pay 25%. But since we're going to have election, the Chatham County Commission chairman will not automatically become the Quorum PO board chairman. They might, I mean, they might be elected as chairman, but now it, I mean, goes through this election process. So they will not pay. So that's divided. So we finalized the fee structure, and this is the fee structure, outlined how we calculate the fees. And then this is the updated population based on the 2020 population, based on the new boundary. This is the population. And I will show you, this is something new that probably you will take a look at it. This is the fee calculation. So basically in Bryan County, Richmond Hill and Bryan County will split based on population. In Chatham County, it will be split based on population. So Chatham County, it's not going to pay for the municipalities, so you have a split. And Effingham County actually decided that they want to cover all of their municipalities. So Effingham County will pay about $40,000, while Rincon, Guyton, and Springfield will pay $0. But at the same time, Rincon, Guyton, and Springfield will have a rotating voting seat on the Quorum PO board. But see, they actually got a good deal. They don't have to pay, but they can serve on the board, and they get the benefit as well. So, and the Chatham Area Transit calculation is based on the 60th percentile, and then GPA and the Savannah Airport is based on the 70th percentile. So that is outlined in Exhibit A, based on all of the input that we received. So we think that the MOU is ready for adoption by the Quorum PO board. So we will just put to the MPO board for adoption on May the 3rd. So right now we'll just ask for the CEC endorsement of the proposed MOU.
Does anyone have questions for staff?
I have a question. And if you mention this, I do apologize for re-asking, but do we have a proposed date for the elections yet, or is it kind of too soon, too early to...
Election for the Quorum PO board?
Mm-hmm.
Because we are going to... We are trying to adopt the MOU, but previously it was like April the 24th, but now we pushed the date back to May the 3rd because of a scheduled conflict. So after that, we will have the MOU sent out to all the parties for signature. So like CAT board, you might have your next meeting available. So it's like between May and June, we hope to collect all of the signatures. So hopefully in June, we will adopt the bylaws. So after we get the 2050 MTP under the wrap, so we will have some time to work on the bylaws. So we hope to have the bylaws adopted in June. So August, the first meeting, we'll do the election.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
So yeah, so hopefully we will do the election. We talked about that at the June, we do the election, but we decided that maybe we'll just do August. So that if they do the elections, so the current chairman can still preside over that meeting to go through the 2050 MTP, then next the chairman will start in October.
I guess as you reported,
Tony, can you put on the speaker?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
As you reported the last meeting, Bryan County doesn't want to have the northern portion in this as part of this.
Yes.
They do or don't?
They don't.
That's what I thought. I saw that with your map.
Yeah, so that is our new boundary. So new boundary shows, remember last time I presented to you the three scenarios that Asia developed, and then the Bryan County wants to go the minimum.
I hear you, and I know that's what they want to do. It's rather short-sighted because the impact in northern Bryan is going to be very quick.
Yes.
And, you know, with the housing, but okay. They may come back.
Okay. I do have another status report because at the February 28th meeting, City of Savannah, CAT, they want us to contact the Bryan County, and they also want to know whether they can change their mind and still join us. So we did reach out to FHWA and GDOT. They checked the federal regulations. Federal regulations say that at minimum, we have to do this update decennial census based on the decennial census, but we can do in between based on the agreement. But for us, for the quorum PO, our take on it is no, we have to adopt the 2050 MTP, because if we don't adopt the 2050 MTP, $0 from FHWA and FDA will come to our area. We cannot risk that.
No,
so even if they want to join us, and we have to update all of our plans, so not now.
Decennial's every 10 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's when they'll have the right to.
Yeah.
They could be, North Bryan could come in.
Yeah. They actually, I think in their previous letter, they indicated they want to relook at it after the next census. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but now, even if it doesn't benefit them, they still don't want to join. But for our take, we just need a boundary so that we can have the revenues, so we have the project list, we have the 2050 plan adopted. So even if now, they want to join, I mean, say at this meeting or at the June meeting or August meeting, they want to join, that we need to revise boundary, I would say no. Speak to the speaker.
You said that you were told to approach them, and how's it going?
No. It's just
Savannah and some other places have asked you.
No, City of Savannah and the CAT just to say, can you just talk some reasons to Bryan County? So just persuade them not to back out. So just in case they need to join us, but we decided no, because we adopted the new boundary in February. We need to carry on. So even if they change their mind later, we cannot consider that now.
Have to be in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, no overtures are being made right now then.
No. Because if we change, I mean, the revenue, because GDOT sent us the revenue estimates based on this boundary. So they have to recalculate and we have to redo everything. No, not now. This is the boundary we have to stick to right now.
Any other questions for staff?
Well, I just want to make a comment that I've got a little bit of knowledge of what's going on up there. I just finished a sewage treatment plant in the Black Creek area, and there's huge growth that's coming. I mean, it's already being planned. It's already being approached. There's already plans for utilities and everything else. And so, you know, in 10 years, it'll kind of be over. There'll be so much development that whatever's in place is in place. So it'll have to go along and make it up as they go along.
Yeah.
I don't mean it'll be over, but there'll be huge amounts of development that are already done.
Yeah, right now it's just like they don't have to go through the quorum PO process. They can go through the GDOT process. So they would just work directly with GDOT. So if they need any transportation improvements, actually I would talk about the 2050 MTP development. We have several projects that overlaps their boundary. So we cannot spend our money on that segment. So let GDOT handle that segment.
You know, that was going to be my next comment, is that this is such an important project to the state that they'll probably have GDOT all over it anyway. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So they don't have to come through us. So they can just go through GDOT.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
What I have a question. What exactly were their primary, I guess, concerns for not wanting to join Core MPO? Like, what was the reasoning they gave?
They sent us the letter last meeting, which is attached to our February meeting agenda. They stated the reason that's because most of the development is happening in South Bryan County, and North Bryan County is still a rural community.
But it's not going to be for the next, I mean, in 15 minutes, it's going to not be.
Yeah, but they try to maintain the rural character, but they might not be able to do that for a long time, so.
Staff asks us to endorse. Do we have a motion on the floor?
So moved.
I so moved.
I mean, what exactly are we endorsing? This
MOU.
Okay.
The update MOU.
All right.
So we have a motion and a second from Dr. Brantley. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda, FY 2024 through FY 2027 TIP amendments, April 2024.
Okay, I'll be giving that presentation. So in March, we received TIP amendment requests from the Georgia Department of Transportation and Chatham County. And we received these TIP amendment requests for the projects SR-404 Spur/US-17 at Back River, the SR-26/US-80 at Lazaretto Creek project, and from Chatham County, we received a TIP amendment request for the Girard Avenue Improvement Project. Regarding public input for this TIP amendment process, we did advertise for a 15-day public comment period that started on April 7th, and the public comment period will end on April 24th. We also advertised for a public hearing, and it was supposed to be April 24th, but the Core MPO board meeting has been rescheduled to May 3rd, so that public hearing will be on May 3rd. In terms of the specifics of what amendments were proposed, for SR-404 Spur, GDOT requested construction funds to be increased and the funding code to be updated from Y001 to Y001 and Y001F, and also to move the construction phase to fiscal year 2026. For SR-26 US-80 at Lazaretto Creek, GDOT requested the funding amount in the row phase to be increased and the funding code to be updated from Z919 to Z919 and Y240. For Girard Avenue, Chatham County requested the row phase be moved from fiscal year 2024 to fiscal year 2025. These are the updated project pages showing the requested amendments. So this would be an increase for the SR-404 Spur. This is the original project page for Lazaretto Creek, and then this is the updated project page, and not sure what happened to the image, but you can see the image of the project location in our original TIP if you would like to review that. Yeah, it must have been the glitch with the PDF file. And then for the Girard Avenue project, this is the original project page, and this is the new project page with the moved row phase. This is just an example of our public involvement materials, what our public notice looked like. And then also, this is our MTP and TIP consistency check. All of these projects are consistent with the current Mobility 2045 Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And this is just the original emails requesting TIP amendments from GDOT and from Chatham County. And that is it for this presentation. Are there any questions? All right. We are asking for an endorsement of these TIP amendments.
Is there a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Dr. Brantley motions.
Yes.
Mr. Abbott, do you second?
I'll second. I didn't hear his motions.
Yes, yes. I'm on. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Hearing none opposed, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving into status reports, number four, the 2050 MTP update.
Okay, this is our main focus because this is the document that ensures the federal dollars come to our area. So we are now in the financial plan development process. So when we have the financial plan, fiscally constrained financial plan, and we will be good. So I'm going to talk about how we are going to do it. So it's basically develop financial plan. You've got to have a revenues, and then you've got to have a project list, and you've got to have a financial balance. So I'm going to talk, we are going to divide the 2050 plan into two different sections for the financial plan. One part is the highway and one part is the transit because they all have different funding sources. So for the highway revenue, this is the GDOT sent us this revenue projection. It's a state obligation based. They're assuming 1% inflation rate after 2026. So it says projects revenue and maintenance revenue are separated. And these are matched funds. So the TCC, actually, we had a special called meeting with TCC in March. So we decided to adjust the GDOT numbers. So we will keep the project maintenance separated, revenue separated, but instead of using 1% annual increase rate, we want to use 2% annual increase rate. And then also for the 2025, 2026, and the 2027, since those are our, we have specific projects because those that are corresponding with our TIP. So we will use the TIP numbers to replace the state obligation-based numbers. And then we will assume no additional local funds, but we do assume $3 million of local funds because we constantly have to provide overmatch for our projects. And then also adjust with 2% increase and no other funding sources. So based on the TIP amendments and the TIP numbers and the TIP amendments that we have processed, so these are the adjustments. We also included in the Bryan County and Effingham County projects if they're located within our area. So we added all of those numbers in. So you can see the highlighted numbers below over here, 2025, 2026, 2027, 2028, these would be adjustments with the previous numbers that I talked about. So this would be our final revenue estimates for the highway projects. So total is about $1.87 billion. That's for the next 25 years. And then we allocate we will allocate all these funds into different cost bands because each cost band, each project has to be inflated and then the cost band into the cost band mid-year. So TCC also agreed with the CORMPO staff that we will have three cost band. Cost band one is 8 years, 2025 to 2032. The mid-year is 2028. And then the cost band two is 9 years, 2023 to 2041. Mid-year is 2037. And then the cost band three is 2042 to 2050. The mid-year is 2046. You can see the revenues allocation over here. So still the project and the maintenance are separated. The total is still $1.875 billion. And then we decided we will allocate, we will have some like set aside from the project revenues. So maintenance will keep its own revenue category because this is maintenance actually is this top survey response. Because remember we did the 2050 survey, this is a top response. People want to maintain that roadways. For the projects, besides the specific highway projects, we want to have operational set aside. So we will use 12% of that for operational improvements. So that would be like signal coordination, intersection improvements, turn lanes, all that kind of operational improvements. And we also have like transit set aside. We decided that we use the electric bus cost $1.3 million as the basis. So we use the $1.3 million for each year. And for bike pad, we actually talked about using previously we used the Y301 dollars, $1.36 million, and then we decided to check the mode share. So bike pad mode share is about 3%. So it was 3%, we actually increased the cost, increased the revenues for bike pad projects. For the 2025 to 2027, we will use specific amount because we do have specific projects in those 3 years in the TIP. So the rest of the revenue will be used for the highway projects. So this is based on the revenues allocated to each cost band and then by category. For example, for cost band one, the revenues available for specific projects would be like $418 million. But many of this money has been already allocated to some cost band one projects. So basically we allocate this revenue. These would be the money that will be ready for projects. And so our next step is to develop the project list and then prioritize the project list. So the priority projects will go into cost band 1, 2, 3. So that's how we develop that. For the transit revenues, we use the current TIP as the basis. So the 2027 is the only year that don't have additional like grants, which is that normal year basically. So it's about $10 million. About $3 million of that will be used for operational improvements. And our plan is actually capital improvement plan. So we basically, we cannot use the money for the operational project. So we have about $7 million for transit capital improvements and with a little bit adjustment in just to say that we might have some additional grant or something. So we adjust that to about $7.5 million each year and you allocate that to each cost band as well. So that's how we get. So for transit, these are the money from FTA, basically FTA based money. So we have $252 million. We did check the Bryan County and Effingham County transit dollars, but those money are actually allocated to CRC Coastal Regional Commission, but those are not used for capital projects. Those are like purchase of services. So we actually had the meeting with TCC today. TCC agreed with us that we will add $0 from Effingham County and Bryan County for capital improvements, for transit capital improvements. So basically for FTA allocated funds, we just still mean $7.5 million with 2% increase annually. So that's the revenue part of it. And then next phase is the project selection and the prioritization. For the transit projects, let me just go through the transit projects because transit projects, we already have this project list like vehicle replacement, ITS project, microtransit maintenance facility, van pool. So we already have the project list. So we would just work with CAT to allocate the revenues into this project because you might need more buses for the first cost band one or just based on passenger amenities like bus stops, you might do all cost bands. So we are going to work with CAD on that. For the highway project selections, we currently have a matrix. So the matrix have like travel demand model. We have coastal regional, coastal empire study and the freight plan and congestion management process. Those would be the four major studies we are going to rely on. So if a project appears in all four of them, recommended by all four of them, that would be a priority. And then you have like sub area studies like US 17, US 80 corridor study, US 7 corridor study, confirming those, and those will be the project selection. So based on that matrix, we have about 180 projects. And then just based on this selection criteria, we select about top 50 projects and it will be just to prioritize the top 50 projects to fit into cost of the 1, 2, 3. So that's what we're going to do. But how do we prioritize the 50 projects? So we are going to do the prioritization based on needs and based on resiliency and based on equity. So I'm just going to talk to you about the needs next. So how we prioritize those projects. And then Anna is going to cover the resiliency part of it. And Aisha is going to talk about equity screening. So this is a three tier. So you add the first tier needs. This is how much it scores. So like if you get 150 and resiliency, you got 50. You just add in. So the final score will be the priority level. So that's how we decide how to allocate, how to select the projects and then just to put the different phases into the cost band 1, 2, 3. So this is basically how we do the project selection and then the final phase would be financially constrained plan. So because of course none of those projects probably not all of them can be fit into cost-plus 1-3, because we are talking about cost estimating. We have to cost estimating. If you have a like I-16 widening project, how much does it cost? If it's cost $100 million, so your cost band are probably just over just with one project. So we decided that we will use like 4% annual growth rate for the cost estimating. So this is what we're going to use for the cost band one. If it's not included in the TIF, we're going to use 2028 as the basis. So, the inflation factor is 1.12. And for cost band two, we're going to use 2037, the mid year, as the base. And the inflation factor is 1.6. And then for cost band three, we're going to use 2046 as the basis. And the inflation factor is 2.28. So eventually we will allocate those funds. And then also we talked about, remember we showed you the categories. So like operational improvements, transit, and the bike path. So we have a set aside. So for these, we have like set aside policies. So if you have local sponsor, your project is consistent with the plan. So it will be eligible. So we have three set aside for now: operational improvements and transit, and then non-motorized transportation plan. The next step is for us to continue the prioritization, and then we will allocate the projects into the different cost band, and then develop and then do the cost estimating, and then develop a financial constraint plan. Just want to let you know that we're looking at this. So basically we have like 50 projects already mapped out. So we might have a little bit changes of these, but this probably will be the basis where we go off. So these would be projects. You probably wouldn't have all of these projects, but these would be the identified needs. So we will prioritize all of this. But what we will do is like for the lines over here, so there might be widening or new roadways. So we will compare them apple to apple. And then you see, so the dots over here, those are the intersection improvements, they will compete within themselves. So you will have like two different tables to show the capacity building projects and then intersection improvement projects. So they will be, have their own scores and then be allocated to the different cost bands. So these would be the projects that would go off the list. So now I'm just going back and show you. So the final product will look like this. So you have basically I have already allocated some. I have already put some projects into cost band one because some of the projects in the TIP will automatically carry it over into cost band one. So after I put in all these projects, the revenue is really available in cost band one is about $100 million. So you don't have that much for any other projects anymore. So basically the highest priority projects will go into this cost band one. We also have Chavers Road, Garrard Avenue. So we already have some bike path projects. So this would be what the financial plan looks like when it's done. For the needs assessment, not needs assessment, for the need-based prioritization, this is what we're going to do. Okay, I'm going to talk about this. So this is how we do the project selection. Remember I talked about 50 projects. So we have the 50 projects over here. See the top one, I-16 widening. It has widened I-16 from I-95 all the way to 6-0627 Bullock County. So we're not going to do this because Bryan County is not part of us. So definitely from Bryan County to Bullock County, that part is out. So it's not going to be part of this. But from I-95 to Pooler Parkway, it has a level service F. So that probably will be included in. And then from Pooler Parkway to the Bryan Effingham County line, that has level service E. So we will see how that prioritization goes in that scenario. So this is basically the project selection and prioritization. And for the needs-based, these are basically our criteria. So level of service, truck traffic, free connection to strategic infrastructure, crash rates, is it on the designated evacuation route, Does it have like high crash rates for bike pad? Does it connect to population centers? So these would be the bridge ratings, bridge conditions. So we actually have the bridge conditions, pavement conditions already. The data is available in our freight plan. So we can just rate all of this. So this is needs-based criteria. So we will do evaluate all of these 50 projects just based on this criteria. So that's the need-based. So after this, so all the projects, we have a score. So this is need-based score. And then they move on to the next step. So Anna will just go into the resiliency score, give it a resilience score, and Asia will give it an equity score for each project. So like I mentioned, so you don't want to compare the intersection improvements with the capacity building projects. So basically intersection improvements and operational improvements like signal corners, they will compete against themselves. And the new roadway capacity and the extensions and the widening, they will compete against themselves. So you don't have like apples to oranges. You have apple to apples and oranges to oranges competition. So that's basically how the highway projects will be evaluated based on needs. Any questions on this? Okay. If you don't have questions, I will ask Anna to do the resident.
Yeah, one quick question. I saw the Green Island Road multipurpose trail, but you didn't really. The Green Island Road multipurpose trail was among the projects you discussed earlier under, I guess.
Yeah, that project is already in the TIP. So the project is, if the project is already in the TIP, that means it's already moving along. So it automatically carried over into cost spend one.
Do you happen to know the timeline on that?
Time, I think we have construction in 2027.
Okay.
That's a small, relatively small project. Normally the bike path project is a small project. So the environmental process takes probably 6 months.
They've already cleared the land for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can let me know next meeting.
Yeah, should be on very soon, that one. Okay.
Hello, good evening. My name is Anna McQuarrie, I'm a staff planner here. I'm going to be talking to you a little bit about the resilience chapter. So how does resilience fit into that financial plan and project prioritization that Wycota just spoke about? And then an update on the Federal Highway Administration greenhouse gas rule. All right, so what is resilience? It's a capability to anticipate, prepare for, respond to, and recover from significant multi-hazard threats with minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. And that's from Federal Highways. So resilience, it's to natural and man-made threats. I tend to focus on the natural hazards, but it's also very important to focus on those man-made hazards. So natural being temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, flooding, whereas our man-made hazards could encompass infrastructure failure, cybersecurity threats, terrorism, active shooters, and hazardous materials. So we just have a photo here of the two, some flooding in Savannah, and then thinking about infrastructure failures, we have the Francis Key Bridge that recently collapsed in the middle due to a container ship. So thinking about resilience, we want to be able to bounce back from either type of threat. So how does resilience fit into the MTP goals and objectives for safety and security, and then system and environmental preservation? A couple of things we can think about are emergency response and incident clearance times, resiliency of infrastructure to risks, and extreme weather, increasing resilience to reduce flooding on roadways, meeting industry, state, and national standards, supporting maintenance, reducing emissions and energy consumption, increasing the application of green infrastructure in projects, reducing stormwater impacts, and then maintaining and improving our roads and facilities. So there's a couple of different ways that resilience is incorporated into the 2050 MTP through potentially through highway funds for specific projects. And so we're doing that with our project prioritization, which I'll get into in just a moment. Our highway funds, so Wycota spoke about those policy statements. There was a TCC special meeting in March where the TCC voted to not include a separate resilience policy statement. However, today at the TCC meeting, we proposed maybe an umbrella resiliency policy that would be included in all the ones that they improved. So maintenance, operational, transit, and bike and ped. And then also transit funds for electric vehicle infrastructure and ITS. So what are the economic benefits of resilience? Reduction in the cost of repairs during the lifetime of an asset, reduction in user costs from having a more resilient asset, and reduction in regional economic losses to local businesses after damage from climate events has been incurred and during repairs. All right. So with the policy statements, they are developed for category projects to correspond to project revenue, category expenditure set-asides, and maintenance expenditures. TCC approved operational improvements, transit, and non-motorized set-asides. So we were proposing to create this umbrella policy. So the language being the project considers solutions to address natural and man-made hazards as part of resilience measures that result in minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. So you can see this statement is pretty close to that resiliency definition. And thinking about how resilience is really embedded in all of these other different sectors. So operations maintenance, we're thinking about life cycle materials. We can consider soil erosion, flooding, temperature, redundancy to avoid supply chain disruption, bike and ped. We want to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, green infrastructure to protect bike paths from flooding. And transit, reducing greenhouse gas emissions through EVs and reduction of single occupant vehicles. So it seemed like the TCC was more amenable to adding this as an umbrella policy as long as resiliency measures are further defined. And so I just have a couple case studies of Florida MPOs. We are not the first to incorporate resilience into a financial plan, but it's not as common, you know, throughout Georgia. But in Florida, they are considering this. And so it is really important to do. And there are quite a few different MPOs and TPOs in Florida that have done this in several different ways. And in a Florida DOT state of the practice for incorporating resiliency. Many MPOs noted that it was really important to have a dedicated source of resiliency funds or discretionary funding sources to provide resources to do some of these vulnerability assessments and projects to increase resiliency. So just an update on the Federal Highway Administration Greenhouse Gas Rule update. Originally, this rule was established in January of this year, and state and MPOs, or state DOTs and MPOs, were required to set reduction targets for greenhouse gases. However, because 22 states filed lawsuits challenging this rule, there was an agreement where FHWA decided not to seek the enforcement of the February 1st deadline for states. Through March 29th, and then on March 27th, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas vacated and remanded the final rule to DOT, in effect nullifying it. So what this means for us is we were anticipating to have a report with greenhouse gas reduction targets due this summer, and we do not at this time. All right. So I wanted to jump back into project prioritization. So WICODA spoke about the first tier, the needs. I'm speaking about the second for resiliency here. So we're really looking at a vulnerability score, evacuation routes, road redundancy. For the vulnerability score, we're using the Federal Highway Administration Vulnerability Assessment Scoring Tool, or VAST, for one composite score. This tool does a lot of the work for us and in a macro Excel sheet. However, a lot of work goes into it. It considers exposure, sensitivity, and adaptive capacity, and we have an assessment team determining these inputs. So just a couple of examples so you can see what this looks like. You know, is it an evacuation route? I have a green circle here. So this I-95 auxiliary lane, no. However, This interchange right here, yes, it's part of the evacuation route. Road redundancy, you know, is there another road that you can use if this goes down? For I-95, you might use Highway 17 instead. And then BAST, which is the main portion of the scoring. This is an example of using the exposure category. So exposure to different climate stressors, those stressors being temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, and wind. We have indicators, so that means it's breaking up. Okay, what are we looking at specifically about temperature, sea level rise, et cetera? And so then we can give it a score for each of these, and then it'll all be combined to one composite score added in with sensitivity and adaptive capacity indicators. We just had a meeting with the assessment team yesterday to determine those sensitivity and adaptive capacity indicators, so moving forward here. And that is all I have for you. Do you have any questions?
You said that in Georgia, we don't do this much, but for Florida, they do it.
So
it's happening, it's going to be changing the thing.
Specifically for funding in NPOs for resiliency, Florida NPOs seem to have more dedicated funding within their long-range transportation plans or within other plans or funding categories. I don't think we have seen as much of that in Georgia yet. I know the Atlanta Regional Commission, the ARC, they have a lot of different resiliency activities. I think they did their vulnerability assessment probably about 4 or 5 years ago at this point. So we have NPOs incorporating resilience, but it's really this specifically was looking at funding set aside for resilience.
Excuse me. You got a picture of something that happened recently. I think it was Baltimore, was it?
Yes.
How do you anticipate that sort of thing? Apparently, their systems failed, though. I mean, how could that have been prevented, though? Apparently, ship should be shipworthy, it should be fit to take out to sea, but apparently wasn't. And they discovered that on their way out and hit the bridge. How do you prevent that from happening?
For bridges in general, this is just a basic knowledge from the news. I'm not a specialist in understanding container ships going under bridges, but it seems like there was an operational failure on the ship itself because they were able to phone in, you know, minutes before it actually hit. I believe there are bumpers that can be put on bridges to help reduce some of the impact here.
Yeah, they're called dolphins.
Dolphins, okay.
Yeah, they're basically large concrete filled. They're not buoys. They're sitting on the bottom. But a good example would be the Sunshine Skyway in Florida. That's right by St. Pete's in Tampa. It's another famous bridge that was downed by a container ship, rebuilt. They have up on islands, huge dolphins protecting the structure of the bridge. The Baltimore Bridge did have them. The ship just one in a million missed every single safety thing and hit a piling, and that's what happened there. Yeah.
So you think something happened then?
I imagine more attention is going to be given to bridges where you have container ships going under them. I don't know any more specifics beyond that, but it's something definitely where we can see that this is going to cause disruption for a long event time period or law.
Well, basically what you're talking about in this report is more how do we respond to say, oh no, something happened to the Talmadge Bridge across the Savannah River. How do we respond to that? Not how are we preparing for it? That's more, I'd say, Georgia DOT.
Yeah. So what the resilience chapter is more talking about, like identifying issues that we should consider. And then with project prioritization and thinking about these different projects, you know, is there an alternate route? If not, you're more vulnerable. So we do need to invest more money in creating a better project here. So if there's a project that may create a second route, or maybe we need to do that, it may be prioritized higher. So what that category of, okay, is there a different roadway that you can use? Or looking at the functional classification. So, how many people use this road? If this road goes down, then what what's the scale of disruption that will happen because of that? So those are a couple of factors in the resiliency prioritization.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Hello again. I'll be speaking to the equity portion of the 2050 MTP. Can everyone read this okay? Okay, perfect. So just to jump into equity and transportation and federal definitions of what equity is. So the federal government defines equity as the consistent and systematic, fair, just, and impartial treatment of all individuals. And equitable development aims to meet the needs of all communities and community members. The U.S. Department of Transportation defines equity and transportation as seeking fairness and mobility and accessibility to meet the needs of all community members. And CORMPO has worked with equity topics before, such as our Title VI plan, our environmental justice work, our language assistance plan, just to name a few things that we've done already in the past. And just individual definition of what equity is and how it's distinct from equality. Equity is distinct from equality in that it heavily considers historical, societal, and individual context in decision making. So we wanted the project screening to kind of reflect context and how it impacts mobility. So why even include equity in transportation in the first place? And it's because we have a duty to create a transportation system that is helpful and accessible to all travelers and residents. So we want to avoid creating a transportation system that's hostile to people outside of cars, or that's hostile to people that have a disability. We want to avoid creating transportation systems that divide communities instead of connecting communities. And a transportation system is only equitable if it is safe, useful, and offers connections for all people. I just wanted to show this as an example of the fact that this is possible. We can create an equitable transportation system that is safe and useful for all road users. This is an example of Vision Zero in Hoboken, New Jersey, in which they have zero traffic-related deaths within their city. So it's not just kind of a fairy tale. It's something within the realm of possibility, and we're starting the work now on the planning and funding side to fund projects that improve that safety, connectivity, and accessibility. And I also wanted to acknowledge, too, the study for the I-16 ramp removal to reconnect that community as well. So Savannah is also starting the process of improving equity within the area. So how is equity being incorporated into the 2050 MTP? First of all, with the MTP's goals and objectives of safety and security, and then accessibility, mobility, and connectivity. We're also doing needs assessments through our non-motorized transportation plan. The non-motorized transportation plan and equity planning have aligned a lot within this process, and then also public involvement through surveys and going out and speaking with the community. Additionally, our project selection and prioritization process is a major way that we are trying to inject more equity into our transportation system and into what we prioritize as a community. So we are setting new measures for equity within the 2050 MTP. In terms of financial investments, we are devoting highway funds to support transit development. We also have a transit funding set aside. We're also devoting more highway funds to bike, pedestrian, and trail projects. In addition to that, we also have a bike ped set aside as well. And then we're investing in transit to create transit, bike, and pedestrian connections. So in terms of this framework for equity and project prioritization, this framework will prioritize projects with bike and pedestrian access, projects that improve connectivity by connecting to vital resources, and projects that improve safety by including protective features that are known to reduce traffic accidents. So the basic idea of this project prioritization method is that it's helpful to all forms of travel by car, bike, foot, And then also to we wanted to acknowledge and develop the ways that people may travel, the multiple ways that people may travel. Additionally, we also based a lot of our decisions on data that's easily available, data that we could easily get. With that being said, let's move into some of the factors that we're looking at. So we want to score projects based on their proximity to transit and transit connections, and then also score projects based on if they have bike and pedestrian improvements included within that project. The justification for that is that the data is easily available, and then also many people who use transit do not own a car, so we really want to support those newer road projects that also have bike and pedestrian improvements baked in at the beginning. Proximity to existing bike and pedestrian infrastructure and proximity to zero car households was also really important, an important factor. So within this scoring framework, projects with bike and pedestrian improvements that intersect with bike and pedestrian infrastructure that currently exists or zero car households will have a higher score because we see it as providing bike and pedestrian infrastructure or alternatives to people that might be cost burdened by transportation, or they may not have a car at all. So this gives them another option. So in addition to it being a roadway project, they have that additional option of maybe bike infrastructure or pedestrian infrastructure. Connection to hospitals, grocery stores, libraries, and schools was also a factor. And the justification for adding these is that the data is easily available. And also these services provide wellness and benefits to the community. So people need to access healthcare, people need to access food. Libraries are important for community building, and schools are also an anchor within the community as well. And just some for other thoughts, adding road connections alone may not necessarily improve equity. Roadway expansion, especially if that expansion leads to higher speeds and traffic volumes, may make critical facilities less accessible. So we really want to pay attention to, say, if we're widening a road, how will it impact the community? So that's something that we want to keep in mind as well. Additionally, we have proximity to census tracts that have high poverty levels, and that's just hitting on that kind of transportation cost burden where we want to ensure that we have alternatives for people that might be cost burdened by car ownership or may not own a car. So that's why we wanted to include poverty as a factor within project scoring as well. And then for safety, we decided on including medians as a safety factor, and that's just because research shows that medians with marked crosswalks reduce pedestrian crashes by 46%, and pedestrian refuge islands reduced pedestrian crashes by 56%. So there's really strong evidence to show that projects that include medians will improve safety. And just important to note within this framework, so interstate projects, so projects on I-16, I-95, projects like that, don't necessarily improve access, connectivity, and safety for all people, really only those people that can own or operate a car. Additionally, historically, interstate projects have often divided communities and negatively impacted the surrounding area, especially for vulnerable road users. So based on that history, based on the fact that it doesn't offer many alternatives for people outside of cars, and it's especially negatively impactful on vulnerable road users, interstate projects would receive an equity score of 0 within this framework. So in terms of what the scoring process would look like, so again, this is based on proximity. So within this map, we have blue dots. The blue dots represent schools, for example. And they are surrounded by a quarter mile buffer, a half mile buffer, and a mile buffer. So essentially, the projects that intersect with these buffers will receive a higher equity score than projects that do not intersect in close proximity to a school, for example. And it would be the same for grocery stores. It would be the same for census tracts that are experiencing high poverty as well. So going into additional methods to incorporate equity in the planning process, as I was putting this scoring criteria together, I really was wishing that there was a way to bake in equity from the very beginning. So I wanted to kind of open up the floor to, I guess, more communication with the core MPO and equity data, just because we've obtained so much equity data and we're happy to share it. We're excited to share it. And so maybe by sharing it and starting those conversations early, equity can be baked into projects at an earlier stage instead of, you know, proposing a project with specific infrastructure in place already. How about from the very beginning, we propose highway projects that have sidewalks already, highway projects that have bike lanes already, or we identify those communities that are really struggling and then from there propose projects. So I was throwing around the idea of maybe core MPO could start having those conversations more, just because we have so much data and we are happy to share all of the data we've collected in this process. And some of the data sources that we have are Justice 40, the U.S. Department of Transportation, ETC Explorer, Census and American Community Survey data is great. We also have data from the CGIC, which is actually housed here at the MPC, FHWA Proven Safety Countermeasures, and also the AARP Livable Community. So the great thing about these data sources is that if you Google them, they're available to anyone. But if you want to have a conversation in the context of core MPO, what we've regionally seen through our own research, you can also contact us as well. That is all for this presentation. Are there any questions?
I had just a quick comment, Asia, yeah. Especially regarding that final part. I agree with you completely. I wanted to suggest that maybe it could be beneficial if you connected with Step Up Savannah, who's currently working on an equity, index, to build for Chatham County. And I think a lot of this data that you've gathered would, support them on an extremely high level. Just introducing some of these data sources to them could be beneficial. So I'd love to connect you with Alicia Johnson if you're okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Questions on how the Hoboken can get to where it is now. You say that's zero death due to misadventures.
So this is in New Jersey, a city in New Jersey.
I know Hoboken is.
Mm-hmm.
It's in New Jersey. I got that. But the question is, how did they achieve, how expensive was it for them to do this though?
So I don't know the exact price.
There's a cost.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually contacted traffic and transportation planners within New Jersey to kind of understand how they were able to achieve that. And for them, they didn't talk necessarily about financial details. They talked a lot about time details and how it took decades to get to this point. So it is possible, but it will take time. And of course it will take money. But core MPO is a funding body. So, when we get federal funding, we're happy to fund projects that do improve, equity and safety and connectivity. But to answer your question more specifically, I do not know an exact price of how much this would all cost.
Are the states doing this? Other New Jersey?
Oh, yeah. So Vision Zero plans, they have existed for a few years now, and other cities besides this one in New Jersey have achieved their Vision Zero goal, where there are zero traffic-related deaths within their cities. Savannah has a Vision Zero plan, and other communities within the area are also creating their own Vision Zero plans. And they're responding to the stark increase in traffic-related accidents and traffic-related deaths that have been happening over the past few years.
Thank you.
I have a question just based on the Hoboken example. What, since you talked with people who were part of the planning or implementation of it, what do you think was the, not the single most important, but perhaps the most effective thing that they put in place? To go to his question, I do know a little bit about the Hoboken thing. I mean, in that I've seen a few videos on it, and a lot of it was restriping and flex posts to sort of corral cars away from zones where pedestrians are. And those are very cheap on the whole, as opposed to completely redesigning a sidewalk. But like, what would you say, did you think personally was like one of the most effective things that they did?
For my research, definitely addressing speed. Speed is one of the largest factors in fatalities, traffic fatalities. So Hoboken made very sure that within their city limits, people slowed down to a safe speed. Additionally, when I talked to them, they were very heavy on consistency because it did take many years to get to this point. And so through all the years within the city, through administrative changes, through any change that happens within the city, they made sure they were still going after the same goals.
Seems to me that it's important that the mindset of the people in the community be such that they this zero goal is there. They're committed to as well, not just people who are trying to get public monies to build roads or, but the people after, you know, say, well, you know, I got to run pedestrians over.
Yeah. Mindset is definitely, I would say when I discussed it with them, everyone agreed like, okay, this is a problem and we are trying to fix it. So we see the mindset changing. Other communities are investing in Vision Zero plans. And so now I think all the ingredients are coming together to actually pursue things like this.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all for the MTP?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
May I make an observation? When I looked at the minutes, what I don't see reflected in the minutes is this, that we as a committee sometimes comment or ask questions about things, but that doesn't turn up in the minutes. I mean, it's as though you present something as a recommendation. And
yeah, actually, I think our minutes are very detailed because Karen is new, but she sometimes does like verbatim. So her minutes are very, very extensive. So almost all of our questions are documented. All of the TCC, not TCC members, all of the committee members' the comments are documented.
We are missing it then. I don't see it there.
I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. It's, you know.
We also have a verbatim, actually. So we okay, let me just go over here. So if you just go to, say, let's just go to this. You also have the audio over here. The audio option actually is just tells you. That's when we go back, because sometimes like if you're not using the speaker, we cannot hear clearly. So we have to go to the like audio to listen to like who's talking about what. We actually document almost in details, very detailed. Yeah. If you see something missing, just let us know, because we normally document everything. Whatever questions or comments that has been made, we normally document all of that.
The reason I ask is because, for example, the Bryan County situation, we talked about it last time.
Yeah.
I don't see where that is. I mean, he's mentioned, but the point is that people said, well, they asked, went behind the question, well, why is it that Bryan County or
probably actually,
doesn't
I
want to get in there?
I think the minutes actually include, that's December. Okay. We haven't adopted it. Yeah, but the minutes, if you click on the minutes, it should have that information. Well, like somebody asked the why Bryan County. What? It should be in the minutes, but.
Because otherwise it would seem that we have a rubber stamp, you know. It is,
you well, it might.
Present something, then what is expected of us? Recommendations to be supported.
Okay, I think it might be like who was at the meeting. Maybe Rob wasn't at the meeting. Were you at that last meeting?
I'm pretty sure I was at that last meeting. So I kind of felt a little stupid asking the question again because I was there and I asked the question of like, what was their reasoning? But yeah, I was there. It was something about, it was, I forget what exactly it was, but I was, yeah.
Yeah, because I reviewed the minutes, and I think Karen's minutes was very, very detailed. I remember reading that part of it, so it should be documented.
Yes, and I'm looking at the minutes now, and I do see Dr. Brantley asked if Bryan County has changed their mind with some explanation as well. So we can go over it a little bit after the meeting, Dr. Brantley, if you like.
Okay.
Let's move on to number five, the congestion management process update.
Okay. I received the CMP report yesterday. So I haven't reviewed this version 3 yet, but I just attached it to just in case that you want to go over it. But basically, the congestion management process is like you use data to identify where the congestion locations are, and then you come up with mitigation measures, either like a signal coordination or travel demand management, or like capacity building projects. So basically, that's what congestion management process is. I would just want to show you some of the findings over here. So we actually, GDOT did send us this travel demand model. So this is based on the projects that is already under construction, like I-16 widening. And then the next phase, this is the steep project. So that means some of the projects that have preliminary engineering or right of way, like project terrain. So the previous one probably wouldn't have the previous map probably wouldn't include the project terrain because the construction funds is not included. But this list, this model actually shows, if you have, because project terrain, we actually have right of way program in the tip. So include that. But even with that, you can still show a lot of red. So a lot of red is basically, level of service F, that means it's a standstill or this is moved very slowly. And level service E is a little bit better, but still considered very, very bad. So we will use this as the basis for project selection. This is one of our sources for project selection. So any project that have a level service E or level service F will be considered for 2050 MTP project selection. So this is basically the travel demand model results, and then we also identified the top congestion locations. As you can see, the US 17, many of these, like between 204 and 307. Yeah, I actually see that because I travel on US 17 every day. So I see US 17. 307, definitely north of I-16, you will see a lot of trucks over there. If you get stuck over there, and they also like at grade crossings, you will see a lot of congestion over there. Puller Parkway, yeah, this is another Euro suspect. And the Victory Drive, at the US 80, you know, where the Home Depot is. So is it Target or Home Depot? Both, yeah. So even without the data analysis, I can pretty tell. So it's just like data analysis can just validate my like experience. So you can see these are the identified locations, but how do we want to deal with this? Some of these problems might already be addressed, like Brampton Road congestion. We are already building this Brampton Road connector. So when the connector is open, it might be better. And project terrain, we already know that we have projects programmed for it. So this is just to help us to identify where the locations are and then we can program and plan projects. So what our mitigation measures is so we can just go not only just for, these are like congestion management strategies. So you can go congestion pricing. Or you just like do toll lanes or something, or you can do like signal coordination, or you can do intersection improvements, or you can like widen the roadways or build a new roadway. So these are just some strategies that can be applied to address this congestion. So these are just some of the mitigation measures that have been identified. But some of these might be applicable to one project. Some of these might be applicable to another project. So it's depending on which one. So we can choose. So basically, the congestion management process, this report is attached to the agenda, cause I just got it yesterday. So I'm going to review it myself as well. If you have any questions or any comments, please let us know so that we can address the comments and finalize this report. Any questions on this?
Thank you.
Okay.
We can move to number six, the non-motorized transportation plan status report.
I will be giving that status update. There we go. So a little about the plan. The non-motorized transportation plan is a document that addresses the development of bike and pedestrian infrastructure in the core and PO planning area. And the goal of this plan update is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. We're aiming for an adoption date for this plan to be in June of 2024, but we have a lot going on, especially with the 2050 MTP, so the timeline might actually be extended. In terms of our main updates with this plan, staff hosted a steering committee meeting on April 10th to discuss equity within the 2050 MTP. And additionally, in that meeting, we discussed the scoring methodology for the non-motorized transportation plan. And we'll discuss that more later in this presentation. Additionally, the final document of this plan is being drafted, and it'll include all of the data, research, and conversations we've been having about this plan. Also, Genesis updated the cost estimations for the projects that were in the 2014 version of this plan, and the scoring methodology has also been developed as well, but still we will allow some tweaks if needed to that scoring methodology. So about the non-motorized transportation plan scoring methodology. So the sources that we use to inform this methodology is from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Equitable Transportation Community Explorer, or US.ETC. And that's been extremely helpful of informing us where people are transportation disadvantaged, transportation cost burdened, experiencing poverty, or if they are in close proximity to high volume roads, for example. We also got data from SAGES and crash data from New Metric as well. We'll be using this data to see the proximity of our proposed projects to census tracts that have high levels of transportation cost burden, poverty, high volume road proximity, and much more. Community data such as the location of schools and grocery stores from SAGES will also be really helpful in this process. And then we'll also include crash point data from New Metric to show areas in need of bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So how will we use this data? So all of this data is mapped out. And we also have our bike and pedestrian projects mapped out. So we'll overlay those mapped bike and pedestrian projects over this geographic data and see their proximity to these different data sets, such as proximity to schools, proximity to census tracts with high poverty, so on. So this is just an example. This is a map of drive time to points of interest, for example. And these white lines are bike and pedestrian projects that we've identified for this plan. Underneath it is the three-county area, Effingham, Bryan, and Chatham, broken down by census tract. So the darker the tract is, that means that those areas have a shorter drive time to points of interest. So that within this framework would mean that they would really benefit from bike and pedestrian access, because if the drive is short, then it might be easy to also add some bike and pedestrian infrastructure as well. So within this framework, using this map data, the projects that intersect with those census tracts with a short drive time will receive a higher score than the projects that do not intersect with a census tract that has maybe a longer drive time. And this is just an example scoring matrix that we reviewed with the steering committee of what we are looking to include, or what we will likely include into scoring. So I only showed one example, but in addition to that, we also have map data in which we will score projects based on their proximity to crash points, their proximity to roads of a certain speed, roads of a certain volume. We're also toying around with functional classification, because that could also give some good data as well. But that also might be covered under speed limit and traffic volume, so we'll just see. We're also looking at proximity to schools, especially because it would be beneficial for safe streets to school grants. We're also looking at proximity to public transit, proximity to zero vehicle households, census tracts that are experiencing high transportation cost burden, and census tracts that are experiencing high poverty. And then also proximity this was the map that I showed, area, average drive time, the points of interest. So the projects that have a lower drive time, the points of interest, will receive more points than ones that have a longer drive time, the points of interest. We're also looking into proximity to what bike and pedestrian infrastructure currently exists. Also census tracts that show commutes by walking, biking, and public transit. And then also bike and pedestrian volumes based on Strava Metro, if we can get that data to work for us well. I'm still reviewing if we can use this for the scoring criteria. And then we also left the floor open for bonus points to give bonus points to projects that are in close proximity to Title I schools, and then give bonus points to projects that are physically separated by some type of barrier, just because those projects tend to be safer. So this is the updated cost estimation methodology that Genesis worked on. And within this methodology, the cost estimates rely on an inflation rate of 2% and have a default construction year of 2026. Additionally, projects that could not have their costs estimated via the tool that was used to do these cost estimates were given a 2% growth rate. Within the tool, all areas were set as urban, and no right-of-way was used in any project calculations. But in the previous TCC meeting, it seemed like maybe calculating using right-of-way within the calculations may be more accurate, or it might be better to include right-of-way in those calculations. And then total costs include preliminary engineering, construction, and contingency. So that is the end of the presentation, but are there any questions?
What is meant by transportation burden?
So transportation cost burden, it's similar to house cost burden or rent cost burden, in which a significant chunk of your money is going just towards your car or just towards transportation.
Bridges, bypass will be part of that.
Hmm.
Where if you live in an area where you have bridges, pass over.
So transportation cost burden refers to people that own a car, and the money that they put towards their car takes up a huge chunk of their income. So not necessarily like bridges or specific streets, but how an individual is kind of burdened by the cost of their vehicle.
That's 30% of that income, the gas or like car insurance
and maintenance and any type of bill.
That car you have.
Yeah, that's it.
Any other questions for Asia? Thank you.
Okay.
Last status report is the MPO boundary follow-up and bylaws update.
Okay, I have talked about the MPO boundary, so I'm going to skip that. So I'll just focus on the bylaws update, because we did talk about having a special court meeting between like the combined meeting of CEC and ACAT, so that we can talk about the bylaw portion for the Transportation Equity and Public Involvement Committee. So basically we need to decide on our membership. This is the bike path committee. Okay, CEC, because CEC and ACAT will be combined, so that's why this is new committee that will be working under. So the membership, so I'm thinking about, cause last time I talked with all of you, seems like you are all willing to serve on this new committee, so you will be transferred to this committee. And then also there were several regular participants from ACAT, because we do have like goodwill industry, but they never participate. So we move them to like advisory roles, but advisory committee members, but voting members, those who really participate regularly will be converted into this like regular, like CAD and always have, like mobility, mobility manager, CAD mobility manager always attends the ACAD meeting. And then housing authority, living independent, you always have those people participating. So, I mean, our goal is to, increase the quorum because ACAD struggled to have a quorum. And the CEC, we struggled to have all the appointees because we were supposed to have 50 members, but we only have like 5 or 6 people. So we would just want to combine these, that's why for the CEC, I have included interested citizens. I have 6 because, I mean, we have no more than 6 people participating regularly for the CEC. So all of you will be transferred to this new committee. Some of the ACAD members, so you will have a joint meetings with the, some of the ACAD members, that's transferred. Cause some of ACAD members have visually despair. And also they have like ADA, problems. So we probably will have to like hybrid meetings. So some of them will just join online. We will have a combined committee, you have more responsibility. Like I mentioned previously, you are only, the participation plan is under your purview. So you are guiding the staff to update the participation plan. But now, because ACAD used to deal with, the ADA accessibility. So now you have to deal with that as well. And the equity that Asia mentioned, like a poverty, so you want to make sure the people, in the low income area have transportation. So that they can go to the grocery stores, so they can go to hospitals. So that will be under your purview as well. So basically your responsibility has increased. So this is a this is the draft that I have about the membership over here, voting membership and non-voting membership, and then the roles and responsibilities, duties and responsibilities of the officers. So we will probably still have elections for chair and the vice chair. I'm looking at you, so might be candidates. So we will do an election. And also for the quorum, because we used to have a different quorum, like TCC have a 7, MPO have, CEC have 35% of the members or something. So we want to standardize all of that. So it's like 1/3 of the seats plus 1. So if we have a 15 voting members, so the quorum for this combined committee would be 6. So it's like 1/3, that 5 plus 1. That's 6. So, and then we are not going to conduct any action items, unless we have a quorum. So which is the standard. So basically, these would be the duties, of the, new committee shall include, but not limited to this. So, take a look at this, and we will just so you're going to address the ADA participation and equity, Title VI, so all of that.
You just said it would be limited. What else do you think of vision? I think there were certain things spelled out there, but that would not be the entire brief. Possible other things would be added.
I didn't understand.
What I'm saying is, I thought you said it would not be limited to those things, duties mentioned.
No.
Are there others in the vision?
No, it's just that those would be your major responsibilities, because currently your responsibility is make sure the participation. In terms of the MPO products, participation plan is your major product. So under this new committee, You are responsible for the participation plan, or not responsible, but guiding the staff for participation plan, Title VI plan, limited English proficiency plan, environmental justice, like equity, bike path. So you will still be involved for the long range plan, TIP. You're still involved in that. And the bike path plan, the non-motorized transportation plan, you will still be involved in that. But it's just that we try to have this big, not big committee, but it's this consolidated committee to be more effective, because currently, both committees used to struggle with quorums. So now, we want to resolve the quorum problems. And also, federal government just constantly throw out all this new responsibility for us to address. So CEC was supposed to only to focus on participation. So ACAD is only focused on ADA accessibility. Supposedly that's the primary role, but now we have a more like Justice 40. You have, resiliency. They also talk about, equity, linking land use with environment or something. So they just have more. So we want to be like committee address more issues. We will probably, after we have this prioritization wrapped around, we will have some time to probably just work with you on this. But if you just take a look at this new bylaw, proposed bylaws, and let us know what is, what works, what doesn't work, we will try to schedule a meeting with you probably in May, because I've tried to schedule meetings with you earlier, but it just, there was so, yeah, we were so swamped. So just take a look at this and let us know if it's like if we didn't mention the specific time. I mean, what time do you want to meet? Do you want to meet like every 2 months or every, what is the preference? We also have to coordinate with ACAD members as well, because remember, some of those are like visually impaired, and also some of those, if they come in person, they have to take the bus. So you have to make sure that the bus still works at that time, if where they live. So we will give, we will definitely, this new committee will have like a virtual option. So it will be a hybrid meeting. It definitely will be a hybrid meeting. So it made it easier for the people with disabilities to participate.
May I ask a question? But even with a hybrid meeting, there will still have to be enough people in person, correct, to have a quorum?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Because we made a special accommodation for ACAT, because of the problems, because we used to meet at the apartments, one of the downtown apartments, and then we moved to a CAT office. But still, because that's where the buses converge.
Right.
But still, since the COVID-19 started, and we found out actually we got more participation through the virtual option.
Mm-hmm.
So, the law only says that decision-making body. So basically it only applies to the Quorum Bill board. So TCC is an advisory committee. Our committee is an advisory committee. So, as long as we can have a good participation, we can make good recommendations. We don't have to, like in person. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
When will we need it? You said in May we're going to have to make these decisions.
We just want to have this 2050, because that is the most important thing for us. So we are targeting to have the bylaws adopted in June. So after we get that in the wraps, and then we can schedule some time in May so that we can have special meetings for this. Yeah, but for now, we already have this draft language over here. Just take a look and let us know. This is not the first time that we show this to you, but just take a look at this and say, if you see anything that doesn't make any sense, let us know. We will revise and we will discuss.
Has it changed since last we saw it? Has it changed?
The change for this committee is probably the membership. Because we try to move some of those like non-participant people to the non-voting advisory role. And if you see some of those shouldn't be included, and let us know as well. But we want to focus on the voting members.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
That is our last agenda item. Take note of the notices. Our next core NPLCAC meeting is scheduled for June 20th at 5:30 p.m. Thank you all.